16,974, Cherry Beach. Any additions to the agenda?
Any recommendations to approve the agenda?
Some.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Can take a moment or two to read the minutes. That needs to change.
I have a yellow mark on my minutes over on the second page. Is that? Just a little mention for it.
That was just emphasis.
It's just an emphasis. Okay, I didn't imply that that was the wrong word. Okay.
In the minutes, at the very end, the commentary about you stating that the council will discuss at their March meeting, they plan to change the procedure and that us do the interview and make a recommendation.
Nothing was done with that.
The minutes are correct in that you stated it that way, but you're going to tell us that nothing happened.
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have one comment on the minute.
Okay.
On page three, under C, container housing, one, two, three, four, five, six bullets up from the bottom, Attorney Eldridge. On the second sentence of that bullet, it references section 19-79. That should be 19-78. I'm sure I misspoke. I had a tendency to call that section, which is the catch-all section that we've been wrestling with. I have a tendency to call it -79, but it really is 78.
Okay.
Motion to accept as amended.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Minutes are approved. No one here from the public to make any public comments. So we're going to do business. A, chapter 19-373, parent 7, political signs, updated from council member, from the council by our member, Alan Butler.
Let's just say we don't have to discuss political signs anymore.
I did notice while I was on my trip that what finally got approved was not exactly what we submitted, but I'm not going to go there.
Not legal either.
The new signs ordinance works today. Okay, vacation rental nuisance violation data. Notification by chief.
Gentlemen, we are doing what we, what I kind of was hoping I could do to collect data for you. We had to make a change in our database, the way our software works, to add that particular element to that. So I got through, I put an element in there for rental property. And I'm actually going to go back and change this. I put a second element and break those down because in our review of that, we truly have about as many problems for long-term rentals as we have for short-term rentals. So I thought it might be interesting for you if we could break those apart. So that's what we're currently doing. I'm having to retrain my staff to some degree to make sure they plug that and put that data in there. It's not something that we normally do. identifies a rental property, all we identify is just an address and rule law. I think it breaks it down by default residential or commercial, but we're going to try to break it down into long-term rental, which is, I guess, anything more than 6 months or more, or like short-term, like weekly rental. So, but we do, I think, in fairness, the problems all don't all come from weekly rentals. There's a lot of long-term rentals that are repeat customers or repeat calls for service. So it's not going to happen overnight. You know, I'd say give it maybe through September, see where we are, pull the data, try to look at it, see if we can get it extracted, and we might have an idea of kind of what's going on there. And the second thing, I don't know, the attorney's here, I don't know how much overreach or if anyone considers it overreach. When we respond to a call, it's not something we normally ask. Do you own this place or do you rent it? And I'm sure they can tell us none of our business if they so desire, because it's not technically a function of law enforcement to ask that. If there's a sign on the house that says Acme Rental Company, well, we're going to call that a short-term rental.
Right.
If it's a house in the village or somewhere like that, if that information comes out or it's asked and responded to, then we'll try to record that. But I don't think it's, I don't know where we stand on the legality of us actually asking if we can get in trouble for asking that question or not.
I don't see how, but I agree with you that the answer you get is the answer you're going to get.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we are on that. I don't know.
Now, I'm going to make the assumption, Chief, but when you respond to a nuisance and you go to the home and say there's been a complaint, next door neighbor, behind, whatever,
yes,
you take those people's names.
Yes, yes. Now,
where I'm headed is, would the data show up if they're a repeat offender summer after summer after summer? In other words, you go back to that house or even at a different house next summer and it turns out to be the same name. Will that flag in your computer?
Not on the fly. It's a relational database, so we can search by name, search by address, or search by name and address. It wouldn't really be set up to do exactly what you're asking for. You know,
I'm just curious.
Every name that goes in our system, whether, you know, remember, and I don't know if I discussed this with you or not, there are two types of, let's call it a report for the sake of argument, two types of documents that get created when we get called on that stuff. If you call me because your neighbor's dog is barking, that goes on a thing we call an OR, an operations report. It's just a short record that we were called, this is who we encountered, this is what we did, and that's the end of the matter. Versus you call us and say, my car's been broken into and they've stolen my wallet. Now, at that point, we go through name, rank, serial number, phone numbers, a lot of information goes into that kind of report, because that is going to end up being criminal at some point. We catch the guy and we need all that data as a victim and the suspect when it comes. But just to answer a call, put out the fire and leave, that goes on in the OR. So there's no, it doesn't go into a lot of detail. It's just not worth our time to spend, you know, 45 minutes on a barking dog paperwork trail. So that's kind of where we hit. Most of our complaints on weekly rentals are noise. Just loud voices and people, music, that kind of thing. And by and large, I would say probably 90%, it's a one-trip call. We get there one time, explain the consequences if we return a second time. And it usually is the end of the matter.
Now, I think it's important why we're asking for this data. I'm not at all concerned about the long-term rental, because the primary reason, if not the sole reason, why we were looking for this is under the state statutes for dealing with short-term rentals.
Okay.
We cannot establish any sort of a, for lack of a better word, a permitting process or any sort of regulations without having two things. One is we have to be able to find within our code what defines a nuisance under this particular state statute. And the second thing is we have to be able to track it. Because I think it's like the offending 10% of properties, not necessarily the 10% of people, but 10% of the properties. So, it, you know, really what we're looking for is just what short-term rental properties are creating most of the problems, and then being able to define what those problems are. So if we want to address it, or the council wants to address it, then we can establish in our code what sort of things constitutes a violation. So, you know, it's interesting about long-term rentals. I think it's very interesting, but that's not how we would use this. It's
that makes more sense to me now that you said that, because so make sure I'm understanding where you guys are coming. You're looking more at the problems we've had in the past with the big wedding parties and those kinds of things that were consistently at one or two locations. That's what's driving this.
What's driving is there's a state, as of last year, the year before, something like that, the state passed a statute that said that we cannot go through a permitting process. The cities can't go through a permitting process at the city level. And the only thing you can really do in terms of doing some sort of permitting process is you have to identify what is a nuisance and put that into the city code. And then you have to be able to track it, because we can only have a permitting process for the worst 10% or 20% of the offending.
May I comment?
Oh, sure.
The statute's 168-424. The General Assembly saw fit to prohibit towns from requiring a permitting process for short-term rentals, but there's an exception. And the exception reads as follows. In no event may a city adopt or enforce any ordinance that would require an owner or manager of rental property to obtain a permit or permission to lease or rent residential real property, except for those properties that have more than three verified violations in a 12-month period, or upon the property being identified within the top 10% of properties with crime or disorder problems as set forth in a local ordinance. I'm not sure which comes first, the chicken or the egg, with respect to defining a crime or disorder problems, but basically three violations in 12 months or being one of the top 10% of crime or disorder problem properties, then we can.
And we have to define in the code what represents a disorder too.
Yeah.
So the interest in the data is not kind of casual interest. It's specifically related to short-term rentals related to the state statute.
Yeah, I understand it much better. So before this all came about, was the town ever in the business of permitting short-term weekly rentals?
Well, we were getting a lot of information that there were complaints, and so we had thought about going through a permitting process, and then this statute popped up. And that's why we had to talk to you, because we couldn't do like a permitting process under the state statute.
Well, it would have been nice to have had this 2 years ago. Okay. We could have done business. Couldn't have done it.
With one in particular.
This has been an item that the General Assembly has been, for some reason, real hot to trot on. And every session they tweak it. And those changes were basically 2014.
Okay.
The real estate lobby is very powerful.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Bottom line, real estate, and there are a lot of towns that are having more problems than we're having, like Fayetteville and some other towns that are just up in arms about this statute, but that's what we have to work with.
Okay. All right, so it's not really being driven by the ROT thing.
It's purely short-term rentals to try to work with under the city statute.
Well, you know, we'll do that. We'll try to collect that for you, but, you know, it's as small as we are, those properties will stick out like a sore thumb here. I mean, we just know, and John will know probably as much about it as I will, because that's who I'm going to yell at when we start having an issue. He has a little bit better relationship, I think, with the realtors than I do.
That's because he's charming.
No, I don't think so. But we'll try to track that data.
Okay. But that kind of explains the logic why we're looking at this.
So it doesn't matter. So I want to be clear on this now. So we respond to a noise ordinance call and we don't apply a citation. Does that still count as a response or a violation, even though we don't write them a citation?
I mean, I would say it does, yeah, because a lot of these things, I would assume you don't write citations, but they would still be counted under that 10% under the state statute.
Yeah, you have 3 verified violations in 12 months or being in the top 10% with disorder problems. So the first part references violation, the second part references problems.
Okay, so it's not, I get my point, is we don't have to write a ticket.
Right, no, I would say if you just have a call, if you could identify the type of call as a noise, because again, we would have to define what the disorder is in our code. So we would have to define noise or, you know, something else in terms of the code. So we'd have to know what sort of problems are the major problems and then be able to identify which are the properties that are having 3 of those violations or in the top 10% of those.
Okay. All right. So those violations that I would be encountering would be those on the, say, the criminal side, or ordinances on the books that the police department would enforce. It would not necessarily include those that code enforcement would enforce, yeah, as far as, you know, 7 cars in the driveway and there's only room for 3, those kinds of issues. We wouldn't.
That's an interesting issue because technically the city could put those type of things in the code.
I think it's a combination of both.
It'd be a combination of both. As long as it did. The way I read that is up to the city to define what represents a disorder.
Okay.
And that's got to be voted upon. And then, you know, some of that might be code violations, some of them might be criminal violations, noise, you know, whatever that might be.
Well, John, I'll just have to work with you and we'll figure out, sort out a little bit about who can watch for what. I mean, that's about the only way I know to do it. Like, you know, I mean, we know it happens, but it's not something that we notice unless we're called there. Then we might pick up on it and go, you know, how many people are here?
And our hands are tied because of the statute unless we do this. I mean, if we didn't have that statute, we could just simply, all right, there's a permitting process, but we can't do that because we have to go through this process of following the statute. So we have to be able to track it and identify it.
Okay.
Like that.
Well, I understand now exactly where you're coming from. This is good information for me. But we can do that. We'll try our best to do that for you. And if we see problems popping up, we'll try to give you a heads up early.
In September, he'll have, we're going to try to have the data for this year.
As soon as it starts coming in, I'll try to give it to you.
And then we have to develop the ordinance based on the data.
We would have to make a recommendation to the council. And I'm sure it'll be discussed, and I'm sure this will happen with the real estate people.
It could be a combination of ordinance and police department.
However we want to
talk. Well, our ordinances fall into 2 categories. Some of the ordinances we are responsible for as police officers. Some John is responsible for. Like, I'm not going to go to force. Give me an example.
A setback violation.
Yes, a setback violation. Or
how about 20 cars in the park on the lawn or something like that?
Yeah, I couldn't. That's not my deal. But noise ordinance, you know, alcohol on the beach, those kind of parties, all those kinds of things I would probably be involved in. Like a tent on the beach, that would be John's
issue. Right, or too much traffic. Yes.
So we'll just have to figure out how to work that through to, you know, because generally when you're going to have me there, John, you know, John will be there the next day, or vice versa. I mean, that's how it rolled with the other 2 places we had.
So, okay, great.
So if you think that'll satisfy your needs, then I'll stick with what I got, and we'll just leave it the way we have it set up.
Nice being on the same page.
Yeah, I was totally going in a different direction for you. So I get it.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks, Chief.
Anything else, guys?
Okay. No.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks, Chief.
All right, John, see you all tomorrow.
Yep. You mentioned the realtors. They 2 weeks ago, they had a meeting with all the local leaders about beach renourishment because they're getting involved in that battle. And then yesterday they had their day of community involvement, which was heavily attended by the media. Yes. So they flat out said, we're going to become much more political now and advocates of what we see as we need. They said that pretty much in that meeting. And Rouser was there, several other people. Mm. So if y'all go this route, I think our meeting last time was packed. I had a feeling we'd be much more involved this time.
Okay, if we develop a new ordinance that leads to
probably twice as many people here.
Something that might result in a permit to a few homes or something.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, what we did last year really, it did its job partly already. It opened some eyes. And
Wilmington went through it?
There's a lot of self-policing.
There was a lot of self-policing, and people were taking accounts of what was going on a lot better. So.
The historic district downtown Wilmington's having a big feud now about it.
Yeah, exactly. They sure are.
They're going to bump into the same issue.
Okay. It all depends on people's families, how long they remember.
Ordinance issue downtown on that stretch of Market Street. It's got all the legal issues, prostitution, drugs. Okay, gentlemen, this joke, let's talk about containers. I think all of you got, or I don't know if you had a chance to look at my email to you with a big attachment from Carolina Beach while I was on travel. Our extraordinary attorney, Mr. Eldridge, has set me straight saying, we don't need to do all that, which is a good thing. Because that will take us more than a meeting to put one of those measures together. Dig into that and list them all and make sure. So James sent everybody a follow-up that came through, and he has his recommendations from a legal perspective on disallowing and allowing.
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to comment briefly?
Yes, I would. Talk about this.
Two topics. One, both of which were referenced last month, in which I felt I was tasked to do a little bit more work on. We'll start with containers used as buildings. And I make that choice of words very specifically. That's easily discussed because all I did was tweak the definitions that we, I think, generally agreed on last month. And you should have those either in your email and they're on the table attached to at the end of the bundle of emails. And the prohibition, they're labeled on top, proposed text amendments prohibiting the use of containers as buildings. That's very much what we talked about last time, but I struck out the limitation regarding design as a dwelling. It occurred to me that you could prohibit a container used as a dwelling and still have the problem of containers being used as offices or other business aspects. So I cut out the limitation, so the prohibition basically prohibits containers. It says no building, no container shall be defined as a building. Therefore, there should be no container uses in any zoning district within the town. And then similarly, on the text amendments regulating containers as dwellings, which basically puts them in the RA-2T district, just like we discussed last time. I tweaked that definition to allow for containers to be used as container dwellings in that district, but I tweaked it so that there's no other containers being used for any other purpose in any zoning district. Now, y'all can do what you want and report to council. You know, it's all policy at this point. So whatever staff and PZC wants to do is fine. I just wanted to explain how I've limited one set, no containers for buildings anywhere for any purpose, and the other set allows containers as dwellings in RA-2T, but no other containers for no other purposes.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
By doing that by adding your definition of container and then your definition of a dwelling container and making that, that striking out shall not design for use as dwellings. It's your feeling that that statement then would, under 19-78, be a specific exclusion, satisfy that specific exclusion requirement from all residential, unless...
Oh, well, that segues perfectly into the second topic that I wanted to discuss. And since they go part and parcel, let's just go ahead and do that. Attached to that same group of documents was a 2 or 3 page memorandum addressed to PZC and Mr. Batson. It's called Regulating Unlisted Uses. It's on my letterhead. It was clear, I think, to all of us last week that, all right, we got Section 1978, which we've called different things, catch-all provision. Was one term that's been floating around recently. But basically what it did, or what it attempts to do, was to regulate unlisted uses by prohibiting them. No use of a land or building unless it's expressly permitted in the district regulations. We also know that that type of regulation has been invalidated by a Supreme Court case last November. So where we were left after the discussion last month was the seemingly impossible task of how in the world, what do? You list, you sit down and try to think of every conceivable use that you don't want and plug them into every district. So I believe I was tasked to look further into that. And it was a very interesting assignment. I was really glad that I had it because the Byrd decision that invalidated 1978 was in November 2015 was actually the fifth case in a line of cases going back to 2010. And basically, what those cases say, two or three things, and you can sum it up. The first thing it says is if you're going to prohibit a use, you've got to be specific and clear about it in your ordinance, which is why they invalidated a similar catch-all provision. So when I went back to the code, it was very interesting that I saw section 19-79.5, I believe it is, which basically lists prohibited uses. And in this case, the prohibited uses that we're all familiar with, internet gaming devices, adult-oriented dancing, adult bookstores. But the point being, you can clearly, let's take container, the use of containers as buildings for dwelling purposes. If you wanted to prohibit that, not only would you go with the text, not only would you go, I think, with the text amendments that are currently before you, but you would also take that particular use and go ahead and plug it into that list in 1979.5. So it'd be adult bookstore, internet gaming, adult-oriented dancing, and containers used as dwellings or containers as buildings. You can expressly provide for that without having to go to every single district and write it in, write it in, write it in, write it in. The second point that I learned from the assignment was for that to be effective, you have to keep up with it every time you have a new use or a controversial use emerge. And it was my impression from, again, looking at 1979.5 and from the current process of wrestling with container buildings, that this town already does that. For example, the internet gaming craze is not that old, and probably in some respects is still ongoing in the court system. That's another very effective lobby, industry lobby. But the town was proactive enough to prohibit that use a few years ago. Likewise, we're being proactive in looking at container dwellings. So, the second point is, if you have to be clear about prohibiting uses, then you're going to have to basically list the use that you're trying to prohibit. Now, the third point is a lot trickier. The third point is basically, when you look at all these cases, and there's some quotations from the case and from an article that I found relative to point three, that Supreme Court case that invalidated our catch-all provision basically stands for the proposition, and I think this quote comes right out of the dissenting opinion, which the Supreme Court adopted when it invalidated that provision. Quote, the law favors uninhibited free use of private property over government restrictions. That's a very telling comment when you are familiar with the cases that led up to Berg, because the gist is, if the use, the two kind of go together. You have to be specific about what you're going to prohibit. You can't be vague and throw it into a catch-all provision. Why? Because currently our courts say that property rights trump government restrictions unless you're clear and express about those restrictions. And the approach that's recommended to deal with unlisted uses that you have not expressly prohibited is to have a provision in the zoning ordinance that you review that unlisted use as being under the standard of the closest similar use that the unlisted use resembles. Let's try to think of an example. Let's say that let's say that your zoning ordinance allows for circuses, and somebody wants to come to town and put on a carnival with a petting zoo, and it doesn't match the definition of service, of circus that assume you have in the zoning ordinance. Under that approach, you would interpret that unlisted use of a carnival as if it was a circus, because that's the thing that it's closest to that you've already regulated. I say that's a very hard proposition to come up with, but that's what's being recommended by the School of Government. So it's a twofold approach. If you're proactive enough to see controversial uses and emerging uses, as you have done with internet gaming and with continued dwellings, then take the extra step, clearly prohibit it, and list that prohibition in a section of the ordinance that already serves that purpose. And because the current state of the law favors property rights over government restrictions, if you encounter an unlisted use that is not necessarily something that you want to prohibit, then you should, in lieu of having the catch-all that you've got, amend your ordinance to review that unlisted use under the standard that it most nearly resembles that you currently have. There's another complex part of that recommendation is the ordinance would also have to provide guidance and standards to staff so that staff doesn't have unbridled discretion in making that determination. Now, that's a lot of legalese, but did everybody understand that? Those are the recommendations for dealing with the catch-all provision. So, to arc back to your question, Professor, if we went with prohibiting container dwellings, it'd be my recommendation that you list it as a prohibited use, in addition to the text amendments, you list it along with the other prohibited uses in 19-79.5. Personally, I think the broader recommendation of amending the ordinance to treat unlisted uses that you haven't prohibited as the most nearly similar use that you've regulated, that's a big deal. That's going to take a lot of work. But it certainly would insulate you from any legal challenges, because those type of ordinances have flown where the catch-all provision we've seen in Byrd was challenged all the way to the Supreme Court and invalidated. That's a lot of litigation. That's a lot of legal fees. So I appreciate, I'll be glad to answer any questions, and I might have been more confusing than clear.
So you really have, there's four recommendations that I hear that you would recommend. One is to, the two that you've written here for the two different options you were asked to do. One is on your second to last page, which would be the language under 19-1, and then under section 19-177, allow that as permitted use in the RA2T district. And then the second would be not to include that. But you would also recommend that in our prohibited use section that we include container dwellings. You don't have that written down here.
No, you're correct. I didn't get that at all.
And then the last one is, I think the very important one, is then are you also recommending that we strike 19-78, referring to that?
Yes, I am, because the...
Because that's been struck down by Burr, so there's no... We should eliminate that. So it's
now,
a package.
And if you eliminate it, you're still left with... It's three things. Eliminate it, yeah, because it's been invalidated. You're going to get yourself in trouble. Number two, you have to be cognizant of emerging uses that you don't want so you can expressly prohibit them. Number three, if you take out 1978 and you're good and you're responsible about prohibited uses, you still have the problem of reviewing and approving unlisted uses. And that's that big number three on page two of my memorandum that I just got finished discussing.
So what you're saying is once we strike 1978, we then immediately need to either list other prohibited uses we don't want, and or introduce guidelines that would allow for interpretation of uses that would be similar to permitted uses.
If you take 1978 out, you got a problem that you're looking at. And the problem is unlisted uses. Now, some of those unlisted uses you might conclude, or council in their policy discretion might say, we don't want that. Well, then that's an unlisted use that you're going to prohibit, and you're going to spell that out in 1979.5. So if it's a prohibited unlisted use, fine. You know how to take care of that. If you take care of that, you've still got one problem left, and that's unlisted uses that you may or may not want to approve. What the experts, basically David Owen, of the School of Government, which is the zoning expert in this state, is recommending is that you adopt a provision that says for an unlisted use, quote, that's not prohibited, end quote, you review that unlisted use as being whatever it's closest to that you are regulating. But
sure.
That you have to have some guidance so that you don't end up being a czar, you know, about unlisted use. Not that you would.
Yeah. But you don't have that language.
No, sir. I just ran across this morning, and I didn't get that. Oh, I didn't do that because that's a lot of work. I didn't know if you all wanted to task me with that kind of a comprehensive assignment.
Well, we've already got certain special uses that would have to come before our planning board. What if we were to put some sort of catch-all in there that, you know, if this proposed use is deemed similar to permitted uses within that existing district, then you may be up here before the planning board for approval on that. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I see where you're going, but that gives planning board a lot of discretion, and that basic discretion on even a reviewing authority, I think, requires quasi-judicial, and that's kind of complicated. If I understood you correctly, the applicant comes in and says, hey, look, I want to do a carnival, and you don't regulate carnivals, but I think it's real close to a circus, and I'm here to show you why. And planning board says, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down. Well, that's discretion, and that's quasi-judicial.
Well, the planning board is quasi-judicial, I think, in the state of North Carolina.
Well, not it is for some things, but not for example, reviewing zoning amendments. So somebody coming in...
Well, that wouldn't be a zoning amendment.
No,
I mean, if somebody comes in, you know...
I'm trying to make a distinction. Somebody comes in that wants approval, and they have the burden of proving.